Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. On today's show, we're going to be exploring billionaire George Soros and the recent events in Charlottesville, Virginia. Before we get into all of that, I first want to be clear that I didn't vote for Hillary nor Trump in the last election. As I see it, both parties are controlled and corrupt beyond repair. I did vote for Green Party candidate Jill Stein because I agreed with much of her platform, including her call for a new investigation into the events of 9/11. What I have noticed, particularly in some of my friends, is that if you belong to one of the two major political parties, you tend to think the way they tell you to think. You follow the party line and somehow can ignore evidence to the contrary. So now I try to just follow the truth, if I can find it. And I don't care where it comes from, left or right, liberal or conservative, if it's the truth. I know that many people on the left wouldn't look into the evidence of what really happened on 9/11 because they thought it was coming from the right, which of course is not true anyway. The 9/11 truth movement spans the political spectrum. But these people are not free thinkers and are controlled by the two parties and are controlled corporate media. And of course, the two political parties now appear to be both just puppets for the deep state. So to get back to the focus of today's show, first you're going to hear part of an interview that I did with Wayne Mattson back in November of 2016. This is the first time it's aired. Wayne Mattson is an internationally published author, journalist, and columnist. He has appeared on international news networks as a commentator on security and intelligence issues. He has worked in the past for the National Security Agency and the State Department, and he is a veteran officer in the U.S. Navy. He's editor of WayneMattsonReport.com. So let's begin with the interview with Wayne Mattson as a starting place to then look at what happened in Charlottesville. Wayne Mattson, welcome to the show.
Hi, good to be with you.
Wayne, could you tell us who is George Soros and why did you choose to write a book about him?
Well, Soros is many things to many people, and depending on whether you're receiving money from him through grants, donations, or whatnot, you have a different view of the guy. I can say that I've been on both sides. I worked for a public advocacy group at one time that got half of its funding from George Soros, so I could say that half of my salary was once paid by George Soros. I certainly had a different view towards him then than I do today, because once I left that umbrella or got out from underneath that Soros umbrella, I started to realize this guy has been responsible for a lot of heinous political operations around the world. And even before I was working for an outfit that was funded by him, I went back before that time and realized this guy had manipulated currencies, the British pound in 1992. And then subsequently, I found out how he basically destroyed the currencies of the what they call the Asian Tiger countries, which were Malaysia, Thailand, Philippines, and a few others he went after. So, you know, the guy is a master manipulator. And I've been told by people who have been in the financial world in London and New York, they say, look, you know, Soros, he's big-time operator. But they tell me, look, he's just a front man for the Rothschild family.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, the Rothschilds, that name was pretty much poisonous in a number of circles and has been for actually, what now, three centuries? So they've got a bad brand for that name. So, you know, a guy named Soros comes along, oddly with a fake last name. Schwartz is the actual family name. He derived this name, him and his father, Soros, which is like a James Bond villain. You know, it's spelled the same way forward and backwards. You get rid of the S's, you get Oro, which is Spanish and Italian for gold.
And George Soros funds a lot of NGOs in this country and around the world. Can you tell us a little bit about that and who some of them are?
Well, he basically bought Human Rights Watch, an organization, when I was associated with the public advocacy group, an NGO. I had a lot of respect for Human Rights Watch. He also has a lot of influence now with Amnesty International. But he made a $100 million donation to Human Rights Watch. Essentially, he bought the outfit. He bought the NGO. But he's also very close with the CIA and co-funding and coordinating activities with the National Endowment for Democracy, the NED, which has been involved in election manipulation in Eastern Central Europe, Latin America, and other places around the world, Africa and Asia. And he's really caused a lot of problems with these color revolutions, which he's funded and helped to foment. Two in Ukraine, one in the Republic of Georgia. The first one ever was what they called the Bulldozer Revolution and overthrew Slobodan Milosevic in what was left of Yugoslavia. And, of course, that has devolved into what we have now with Kosovo being, headquarters for not only Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State, but also all kinds of smuggling activities, human trafficking, including children, organ harvesting from human beings.
Can you tell me how he goes about overthrowing countries through these color revolutions that you mentioned in your book? And maybe you could talk a little bit about Gene Sharp and how they use the NGOs to do this?
Gene Sharp heads up the Albert Einstein Institution. He's a former, I guess he's an emeritus professor at the University of Massachusetts. But he came up with several templates, published many books on basically how to conduct these, what he calls nonviolent revolutions. And this, the Gene Sharp model was adopted by two groups that were involved in the ouster of Milosevic in the 90s, one called Canvas and the other called OPCOR, exclamation point, Serbo-Croatian. And they used various symbology, the clenched fists, which you see common in many of these Soros-themed revolutions. The Arab Spring, you saw a lot of placards and whatnot, banners with the clenched fist. This is quintessential Sharp and Soros because of several things that Sharp said. To have a successful street revolution, you have to adopt symbols or colors, and hence we have the themed revolutions or the color revolutions. And of course, the CIA has been very active in supporting these operations through the National Endowment for Democracy and the U.S. Agency for International Development. And we even had Victoria Nuland, who was Hillary Clinton's press spokesman when she was Secretary of State, and then Kerry elevated to Assistant Secretary of State for European Eurasian Affairs. I mean, she's had her fingerprints all over the Maidan Square revolution in Ukraine, which gave us a nice little Cold War era showdown with Russia over Crimea and eastern Ukraine. It allowed Nazis to take over the key positions in the Ukrainian government.
Here he's referring to George Soros.
He's like the perfect, Ian Fleming were around today, he would say, geez, I mean, I created all these villains for James Bond, but I never realized one would actually show up in the flesh, and that's, George Soros. Sort of like Goldfinger, he amasses great wealth by destroying the economies and monetary units of entire nations. He thrives in chaos, and so you see George Soros, of course, giving $1 million of investing, I should say, $1 million in George W. Bush's failed oil company, first oil company, Arbusto in Texas. And, there you had George Soros investing $1 million, and you had the brother of Osama bin Laden, Salim bin Laden, investing $1 million. Herein, we've got the real villains with this international globalized economy.
So what's the end game? Why does George Soros do all of this, other than to enrich himself? Are there other reasons for this?
Well, I think he's a useful mastermind for the CIA because the CIA, they're connected with him in other areas. When the CIA basically got out of the business of running Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty and Radio Free Asia out of Munich and Prague later on, there was George Soros to basically, with his Open Society Institute, to pick up where the CIA left off and coordinate the activities of these propaganda stations, which, after the Cold War was over, I see no reason why there's still a Radio Free Europe. I mean, what's not free in Europe? Soros would say, Russia, Belarus. Well, they're free from the clutches of the European Union, the bankers in Frankfurt, and the con artists that run NATO. So that's a form of freedom. He doesn't see it that way, but I certainly do. And Radio Free Asia exists only to undercut the governments in former Soviet Central Asia states and China. And Radio Liberty, I don't even know why they're still around. That was basically formed after World War II by a bunch of ex-Nazis who were brought over to this country to help fight the communist governments that took over in many of the Eastern European nations. So Radio Liberty still exists. It shouldn't, but Soros helps coordinate their activities as well.
Okay, so Soros is behind the overthrow, these color revolutions. He's behind funding a lot of the NGOs that help out with that. And you're also saying he's behind these media, these propaganda media outlets now.
Yeah, not only the old Cold War ones, but OSI, his Open Society Institute, and the foundation also run a lot of their own media operations in Central and Eastern Europe, websites, newspapers, magazines, radio stations, television networks, and they all basically sing the song that is provided to them by Soros and the CIA.
Okay, so that brings us to our U.S. elections and the demonstrations following. And it looks like we may be having a purple revolution based on the outfits that the Clintons wore the day after the election. And maybe you could talk a little bit about that and Soros' involvement.
Yeah, when Hillary gave her concession speech at the New Yorker Hotel in Midtown Manhattan, you know, I noticed, well, first of all, Bill Clinton wearing his bright purple tie, and then Hillary comes out, you know, she's got this sort of pantsuit with purple blouse and purple lapels, and it was so unusual that some of the reporters asked, not them, but their spokespeople, what's with the purple? And they, oh, well, this is our way of saying, you know, blue America and red America has to come together, and when you mix those two colors, you get purple. I wasn't buying that because, first of all, it's such a convoluted answer. And then we saw the protests in Seattle and other places. I noticed a lot of the protesters were wearing purple. And I said, that's it. This is what Soros is doing. So he's funding these operations through MoveOn.org, Black Lives Matter, a group called Demos. They're all part of this. And it's clear that Soros had banked heavily on Hillary winning the election. Now would like to try to reverse it. And he's doing to us what basically he and the CIA have done to a number of countries in reversing election results that were democratic, and even the Carter Center. And I'm glad that Jimmy Carter has nothing to do with this criminal, George Soros. There's actually no evidence. They've been on opposite sides in a lot of foreign elections where the Carter Center says, yep, free and fair, as far as our monitors are concerned, for example, Venezuela. And there you got Soros saying, oh, no, unfair, we're going to get the opposition out in the street to protest the election, which he's done in many cases.
And he gets the opposition out because he funds Move On and he funds Black Lives Matters and those kind of organizations?
Yeah, gives him quite a bit of money. And of course, he dumped hundreds of millions of dollars on Hillary Clinton in her various campaigns, the 08 campaign, the 16 campaign, and her Senate campaigns in New York.
And so is Donald Trump another chosen one? You know, they pick two candidates and they don't really care which one wins. They're going to control them anyway. Or what do you think?
I'm not certain of that. Now, certainly Trump comes out of that same, you know, he ran and raved about Wall Street, but he's a product of that. It could be that the country has been conned by him, but looking back in history, people thought that both Roosevelts, who came out of that New York money class, Theodore and Franklin, his cousin, were just going to represent the interests of Wall Street, even though the rhetoric would have indicated otherwise. Theodore Roosevelt, who became president because of the assassination of William McKinley, certainly went after his own class when he decided to bust the monopolies of J.P. Morgan and Andrew Carnegie and Rockefeller. And so he certainly acted against his own class, as did Franklin Roosevelt, with the controls he put in place on Wall Street after the Depression and his very socialistic programs to get the country moving again, the Work Project Administration and all the other programs, and Social Security, which was considered to be a socialist thing. Now, we've heard Trump on many occasions say he's in favor of a single-payer national health system for the United States, much like Canada. Well, that's certainly not anything Wall Street would want. Tearing up these free trade agreements is totally against what Wall Street wants. Getting tough with China on their 24% tariff on U.S. products as opposed to the 2% or less we have on them is definitely not in the interest of Wall Street because of all the factories they've sent over to China. So listening so far to Trump, I'm wondering if we've got a potential Roosevelt on our hands. Obviously more foul-mouthed than, well, I'm not sure. Teddy was pretty coarse, too, as was Franklin, so, but not publicly. Normally not publicly.
So time will tell if Trump is going to be like that.
Time will tell. I certainly, so far with his cabinet choices, you know, this guy Mnuchin who comes out of Goldman, well, he was with Goldman Sachs a while back. We will see.
Some of those choices don't look hopeful, but...
They don't look great, no.
In your book about Soros, you say that the end goal actually is to take over the world, the New World Order, and they have to then take out Russia and China. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, that's the end game with these regime changes. This Arab Spring, the idea was, well, these regimes would fall, and then it would spread into Central Asia. You get rid of these dictator presidents in Kazakhstan, and eventually this would spread into Russia and China. So you've got George Soros. He was funding all kinds of NGOs against Putin in Russia. Now, Putin reacted to that. He let them exist for a while, and he finally said, all right, you're all out of here. The ones that are left have to register with the government. And then the Chinese realized that Soros was backing this group in western China of these Uyghurs, these Muslims that live in what was once known as East Turkestan, and they're demanding independence, but a lot of them have ties to the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups, and the Chinese have reacted very violently against the idea of these groups spreading into western China. He was also involved in what was known as the Umbrella Revolution, another team revolution in Hong Kong, the underpinnings of which were to have Hong Kong declare its independence, sort of like Taiwan. And again, the Chinese cracked down pretty heavily on that. Soros has also been involved in some chicanery in Macau and another island, Hainan Island, which apparently he has some investments in. But Soros was looking at trying to stoke a nascent secessionist movement there to, like, create two offshore islands, Taiwan and Hainan, that would be independent. But this is clearly an attempt to break up China. His daughter is also very much involved in supporting the Tibetans and the Dalai Lama's government in exile and various other groups in that part of China. So it definitely, there's an operation by Soros to break up China. You got 1.5 billion people. You can't really do a color revolution for that many people. It's too big. Russia, I think basically the same idea with Russia, which has still a lot of ethnic republics. So you see Soros being involved in stoking the flames down in the Caucasus with these Muslim groups in Chechnya, for example. He's got his tentacles, I was going to say fingers. It's more like tentacles. He's got them spread everywhere.
And that brings me back to the fake news reports that have come out from the Washington Post recently. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit. Is that connected to Soros in any way or these goals?
Well, the fake news, the Washington Post, of course, ran this story based on this new website. It's just been around a couple of months called propornot.com, propaganda or not. And, of course, the guy that wrote this guy, Tinberg, the Washington Post reporter, wouldn't even say who these people were that were behind this website where they put out a list. It almost looked like a Joe McCarthy list of websites they said were trafficking in fake news. Now,
that's ironic, isn't it?
from the Washington Post, which, of course, in 1981, Janet Cook, one of the reporters, got the Pulitzer Prize for writing this, this heartbreaking story about a 7-year-old African-American kid named Jimmy who lived in the district and was hooked on heroin. He was a heroin addict, 7 years old. The only problem with it was, oh, by the way, it was Bob Woodward, the assistant managing editor, submitted the story for a Pulitzer Prize, which it received. The only problem with all this is there was no Jimmy. Janet Cook made up the entire story. She had to give back the Pulitzer. And this is the Washington Post. This is Bob Woodward. This was Ben Bradley was still involved. As, you know, he's still the editor at the time.
Right.
And they have the audacity to talk about fake news?
Right. They're the ones who are talking about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and never challenging
that. Oh, yeah. And the New York Times were the two biggest fake news purveyors. The New York Times had a guy named Jason Blair submitted 34 stories with basically fake places. You know, the Dateline, the place where he was. He wasn't there. So he made up the whole thing. He submitted tax plagiarism, made up at least 34 stories. And USA Today, of course, had a guy named Kelly who was also making up stories about the Iraq War. So, and, of course, NBC with Brian Williams, their anchor, making up stories about coming under fire, being in a helicopter in Iraq.
That's right.
And, you know, you want fake news, go to the mainstream media. It's full of it.
And, again, you were just listening to an interview from November of 2016 with Wayne Madsen of WayneMadsenReport.com. So now let's move on to what recently happened in Charlottesville. We have the Unite the Right there to protest the planned taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee in Lee Park, which is being renamed Emancipation Park. The Unite the Right group had a permit to be there. But some of the leaders of the Unite the Right had connections with the State Department and the Hillary Clinton campaign. Then you have the groups of counter-protesters, including a loose group called Antifa, or anti-fascist, and the group Black Lives Matter, which receives funding from George Soros. And then there was also a stand-down order for the police. Highly unusual, I would say. And you can watch a video from YouTube where you can see, I think it was the National Guard, telling the Unite the Right protesters that they were now there illegally and had to leave the park. The National Guard forced the protesters out of the park right into the crowd of counter-protesters, and violence immediately broke out. This looked intentional since they could have left safely from the other side of the park. And here's a clip elaborating on some of these thoughts. It comes from the show Headlines with a Voice from the Daily U.S. and International News.
A Charlottesville police officer has come forward to express his anger at being told to stand down by the city mayor during violent clashes between protesters. He also claims the protests, which pitched white supremacists against members of Antifa, were set up to further the agenda of the elites. We, the Charlotte police, were ordered to bring the rival groups together. As soon as they were in contact with each other, we were told to stand down. It was outrageous. We weren't allowed to arrest anyone without asking the mayor first. We weren't even allowed to stop the driver as he sped away. The event was being set up as far back as at least May, and it went like clockwork. Michael Signer, the mayor of Charlottesville, ordered police to stand down during the most chaotic and destructive period of the protests, despite police protests against orders. We wanted to do our job and keep the peace, but these fuckers in charge really want to destroy America. Fox News reporter Doug McElway was on the scene in Charlottesville, and he backs up the police officer's claims. I can say, having been in Emancipation Park from early on that morning, that what I saw with my own two eyes confirms what this law enforcement source told us, at least from all visible appearances. We saw people coming out of that park who had head wounds, who were bleeding from the head, people walking into the park with bats, with sticks. You saw what they were wearing, helmets, body armor. They had come, and this pertains to both sides, they had come to do damage. You can't help but notice from that video that had police been more proactive, they could have potentially calmed this thing down to some degree. Michael Signer is a Virginia Democratic activist with close ties to Barack Obama and John Podesta. Before landing the Charlottesville mayor job, he previously worked closely with Podesta at the Center of American Progress and worked with him again on Barack Obama's State Department transition team. The New World Order, led in the United States by elite operatives, Obama, Podesta, Soros, Clinton and company, are pulling out all the stops to create division through chaos and destruction. Crowds of paid protesters and useful psychopaths are sent into pitched battle against one another to sour the mood of the nation and further divide us all. They're manipulating and controlling newsworthy events in order to maintain power and control over the public and to swing public opinion. The man accused of being a neo-Nazi and murdering a woman by deliberately driving into her during the protests in Charlottesville is in reality a supporter of Hillary Clinton and a member of Antifa in receipt of funding by George Soros. White supremacist and Unite the Right leader Jason Kessler has been exposed as a supporter of former President Obama and a hardline member of the far-left Occupy movement. When did he change his political leaning? According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, an organization that is certainly no friend to conservatives, Kessler revealed his political transformation around November 2016, the same month Donald Trump won the presidential election. If you think that's suspicious, wait until you hear about the other actors in this enormous setup event. Brennan Gilmore was on the scene and was the author of the first viral tweet about Charlottesville. He was later interviewed by MSNBC. He was presented as an accidental witness, but who is he really? Gilmore worked in Africa as a State Department foreign officer under Hillary Clinton. The New York Times mentioned this coincidence and then later deleted it. Brennan Gilmore was also involved with the Coney hoax in 2012, and he's currently chief of staff for Tom Perriello, who's running for governor of Virginia and received $380,000 from George Soros. So the first man on the scene whose tweet went viral and who was later interviewed on mainstream news as a witness just happened to be a State Department insider with a long history of involvement in PSYOPs? If you think that isn't fishy, how about this? Since the Charlottesville protests and his appearance in the media, his information was suddenly removed from the State Department websites. The elites know we're onto them, and they're trying to cover their tracks. They can censor Google and social media and close down accounts, but they'll never be able to stop us sharing information and speaking to each other.
Another interesting part of the Charlottesville event was that the driver of the car that rammed into the crowd doesn't look anything like the guy who's being accused of doing it. And from what it looked like to me watching the videos of the protests, both sides participated in the violence. But the corporate and so-called mainstream media only blames the Unite the Right group and blames Trump for their existence, fueling the deep state's ongoing efforts to discredit Trump. As Cynthia McKinney has said, two factions of the deep state are fighting it out with each other, and we are the ones who are going to suffer from it, with probably more crackdowns on freedom of speech, on the internet, and the right to assemble and protest. So from what's happening around the country since the Charlottesville, Virginia event, it seems like the deep state is succeeding in dividing and conquering us. While they've got us distracted fighting each other, then we don't look at what they're doing all over the globe and to us right here at home. Please do your own research before you drink their Kool-Aid. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.